Doctor-assisted suicide is our topic for this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is bioethicist Wesley J. Smith, who wrote this recently. Doctors who intentionally prescribe lethal doses of opioids for use in assisted suicide have far greater legal protections than physicians who prescribe the same drugs responsibly to control pain. End of quote. Wesley Smith, it's great to have you back on the program, and I should give your Twitter handle where all your articles can be found, which is @ForcedExit. And as a starting point, why don't you explain your handle, your Twitter handle? What does that mean, Forced Exit?
Hi, Jerry. Forced Exit was a book I wrote, in fact, really in its third iteration, against euthanasia and assisted suicide. It's called Forced Exit, Euthanasia, Assisted Suicide, and the New Duty to Die, published by Encounter Books. So when I joined Twitter, I tried to use my own name, and somebody had grabbed it first. So I turned to Forced at Forced Exit, and I've had it ever since.
Sure. And I remember about 25, 30 years ago, there was a famous book by somebody who was an advocate of suicide, doctor-assisted or otherwise, and I think it was called Final Exit.
Yes, that was Derek Humphrey, who was the founder of the Hemlock Society. And Hemlock Society, which was the predominant advocacy group, except they're less honest in their name now. They changed their name to Compassionate Choices, using a gooey euphemism instead of the honest truth, which is they advocate for suicide for some people, and they advocate that killing or suicide as a remedy to end suffering is a good way to go. And it's a struggle that is not only happening in the United States, but throughout much of the West.
I understand that there was a 104-year-old scientist from Australia, as I remember, who went to Switzerland to end his life. Tell us about that.
Yes, his name was Goodall. He was not terminally ill. He was suffering, he was 104. He was suffering some debilitation. And he had been a longtime euthanasia advocate. And euthanasia is not legal in Australia, although assisted suicide is legal and will soon be anyway legal in the state of Victoria, Australia. So he was well enough to fly from Australia to Switzerland, which is no easy thing. And he went to what is known as a suicide clinic in Australia, where he paid money to have himself made dead. What was really alarming is that the media went gaga over this event, covered it extensively, and promoted and celebrated geriatric suicide, because that's what we're talking about. And so you see that despite some advocacy arguments that assisted suicide should be limited to the terminally ill, there's no way it's about the terminally ill. This is an example, and indeed, I write quite often on National Review in the corner, Since Dr. Goodall committed suicide, there have been at least two pieces published, one in USA Today and one in an Arizona newspaper, advocating that we open assisted suicide not only to the terminally ill, but to the elderly who just think they've had enough of life. Once you go down this road, once you start swallowing the hemlock that killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering, there really is no end in sight.
You've been writing on these things for years as a bioethicist.
25. My first piece, unfortunately, came out in June of 1993 in Newsweek magazine. I wrote this piece. It's called The Whispers of Strangers. And if people are interested in it, they can Google my name, Wesley J. Smith, comma, Whispers of Strangers, and it'll come up. And I wrote it because a friend of mine committed suicide under the influence of Hemlock Society literature, literally proselytizing for suicide, teaching her how to do it and giving her moral permission to do it. And I was so angry about this. My friend died because of this. My friend took this literature and underlined in yellow ink the poisons to take, how to use the plastic bag to make sure she died, underlined these proselytizing stories of supposedly good assisted suicides. And I was so angry. I at the time, I was writing books with Ralph Meyer.
Okay, wait. Now, I'm sorry. Your phone is breaking up. So get into a good cell if you would. Yeah, okay. Go ahead and repeat that last sentence or so.
I was so angry at what was happening with my friend who had depression issues, and she killed herself on her 76th birthday. And I wasn't even thinking about these issues. I was writing books with Ralph Nader at the time, that I wrote this piece, The Whispers of Strangers, in which I warned about the assisted suicide movement. And I warned that if we take the logic of this idea that killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering, at some point we would throw organ harvesting in, and I said, as a plumb to society. And people called me an alarmist, and I got all kinds of hate mail, which is when I realized something had happened to my culture, and I didn't know where I was when it happened. But I was so upset by this mail, and yet now in the Netherlands and now in Belgium, where lethal injection euthanasia is legal, people with mental illnesses who want to die are brought, they're not terminally ill, they have terrible mental illnesses, depression, self-harming, whatever it might be. They are brought into hospitals, they are infused with poison, and when they die, they are wheeled into a surgical suite and their organs are harvested.
Oh my.
Exactly what I predicted. And instead of being in an uproar, the organ transplant medical community writes, allows articles to be published in their journals with all due respect about how well these grafts are taking, and some are even saying that this is a potential remedy for our organ shortage. Well, I cannot imagine anything more cruel than to tell somebody who's having a terrible time because of a desperate mental illness getting through the night that their deaths have greater value than their lives. But that's what euthanasia does. That's what assisted suicide does. It corrupts everything it touches.
Wow. And since you wrote that first piece way back when, there have been a couple of states that have adopted right to die type laws. And one thing that's interesting is so often those laws might have very strict guidelines, and yet once they get passed, it seems like everything stretches from there.
Well, the guidelines aren't strict. They pretend to be strict.
Ah.
So they'll say, for example, when they're trying to sell assisted suicide, this is only for people whose pain cannot be alleviated when nothing else can be done to prevent suffering. It's just a safety valve. But if you take a look at the way the laws are actually written, it doesn't require any suffering at all. It just requires that the patient, like the Oregon law, be reasonably expected to die within 6 months, and that the suffering is unacceptable to them. Well, that's a wholly subjective issue. And by the way, most of the people who commit assisted suicide, whether here or overseas, don't do it because of unrelievable pain. They often do it because of fear of losing dignity, fear of being a burden, fear of losing the ability to engage in enjoyable activities, really existential issues.
Yeah.
Now, these are important and crucial issues to help people grapple with and help people overcome. But instead of doing that, instead of engaging in suicide prevention as we should, and as Dame Cecily Saunders, the creator of the hospice movement, urged and created her system to do, people who are diagnosed with a terminal illness are denied that essential treatment because people say, well, we shouldn't give them suicide prevention. That's like saying, well, we shouldn't give them morphine, and shouldn't we applaud ourselves after the assisted suicide? People who are dying in the states where assisted suicide is legal are often being denied suicide prevention services that would be offered to anybody else. And that's just a terrible, terrible thing, because it's an abandonment of people at their most vulnerable moments.
Wow. And I understand you have written recently about Belgium and some incredible abuses related to euthanasia in that country. And there was even a man who resigned and wrote an incredible, short memo on that. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes. Belgium has really jumped headfirst with a smile on its face into the ethical abyss. Not only has it legalized euthanasia, but it has permitted joint geriatric euthanasia killings of elderly couples who want to die because they're worried about future mourning and grief over widowhood, which, of course, everybody worries about. But the answer shouldn't be to kill the couple. You have, as I mentioned, in Belgium, you have organ harvesting coupled with euthanasia. The same thing is true in the Netherlands. You have in Belgium no age limit in terms of assisted suicide. And if a doctor thinks that a child, who can't, by the way, consent to a tattoo, but if the doctor thinks that a child is mature enough to decide they want to die if they're sick, then the doctor can help kill that child. It's really a terrible situation that has occurred in the Netherlands and Belgium, in Switzerland with the suicide clinics, in Canada, where the Supreme Court imposed a nationwide euthanasia right, an active positive right to receive euthanasia, and where a court in Ontario has said that doctors who do not wish to kill, if they're approached by a patient who is legally qualified to be killed, and if a doctor has a religious objection to it, that doctor had better either kill that patient or find another doctor who will kill that patient or get out of medicine. That was a court ruling.
Wow.
That doctors, every doctor, Christian doctors, Catholic doctors, Hippocratic Oath-believing doctors, Muslim, Jewish doctors who don't believe in euthanasia in Ontario, Canada, have to either kill when a legally qualified patient asks to die or procure the killer. That's tyranny. And that is something, the medical conscience issue, which is growing white hot. And because, you know, when there's a positive right to euthanasia, since the government isn't going to set up killing camps, they're going to coerce doctors to do the deed.
Whoa, this is awful. I hope this is not a, you know, a scene of things to come. Now, I understand that there are some places where there have been some good laws in contrast to what you just described in Ontario and then also Belgium.
Well, there are certainly a lot of laws that prohibit assisted suicide and euthanasia. And in fact, we hear a lot about the countries where these laws pass. Most of the time, the vast majority of the time, euthanasia and assisted suicide is rejected. The media doesn't report it very much because the media is in the tank for this assisted suicide agenda. But just in the last week, Portugal and Finland parliaments refused to legalize euthanasia.
Oh,
also, in the last couple of weeks, the a court in California invalidated that assisted suicide law as improperly passed because it was forced through in a special session that was dedicated to Medicaid funding, and instead it was hijacked for the purpose of legalizing assisted suicide, and that law has now been invalidated.
Okay, so there are some positive things happening. They're just not highlighted by the media. We have about a minute.
People are fighting.
Yeah.
People are fighting this agenda in a very diverse, strange political bedfellows coalition.
Yeah.
For example,
yeah,
some of the strongest opponents of assisted suicide are disability rights activists.
Mm.
They tend to be very liberal politically. I'm speaking generally, of course.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to not be pro-life on the abortion issue. They tend to be very secular in their outlook. And they work with pro-lifers who, again, speaking generally, are
sure,
often conservative in their outlook, religious in their viewpoints,
yeah,
and pro-life on abortion. And yet these two diverse groups have gotten together and seen the danger of assisted suicide, put their differences on other issues aside, and work together to prevent assisted suicide. And every time that coalition comes together, and which also includes medical professionals, advocates for the poor, civil rights activists, and so forth, every time that coalition comes together, just about every time, the death agenda is defeated. It's when that coalition is somehow not does not coalesce that assisted suicide advocates make the false claim that it's only about religion and can often get these laws through.
Hmm. Okay, we have about half a minute left. I understand that sometimes the campaigns for assisted suicide are labeled as compassionate and caring. And what's your comment to that?
I just find it reprehensible. Compassion means to suffer with. Assisted suicide and euthanasia discard the problem, discard the person, throw that person away, or urge themselves to throw themselves away. My dad and my mother are both gone. My dad died of cancer, and my mom died of Alzheimer's naturally. My mom died in my home of Alzheimer's. Are we to say that because I didn't kill her, or I didn't stuff her with drugs, that she didn't die with dignity? I resent that. She died with dignity, as did my father, a natural death surrounded by loved ones who cared about them.
Wow. Wesley J. Smith, discovery.org, or go directly to Twitter at Forced Exit, @ForcedExit. Thank you, Wesley. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, bye-bye now.